Thank you very much. As was just repeated, this is the title of my project. I'm from the Queensland University of Technology in Brisbane, in the sunny state of Queensland, Australia. So I worked on this project with my boss, Peter Grace, and in conjunction with Ralph Kieser and Klaus Badabakbal from Garmisch-Partenkirchen. And my associate supervisor on this project was Keith Weir. So there's been a lot of talk about land use change and Terenzio's talk, for example. I sort of come from a different perspective. I'm looking at the historic effect of this land use change. So in Australia at the moment, agriculture is a pretty big part of the national greenhouse gas inventory. And with just last week, our government actually passed a carbon tax initiative, and they put a price on carbon for $23 a tonne. So it's become very important for land use change and forestry because of this. There's suddenly a lot of interest in it because of possible sequestration and all possible emissions from these systems. So although in Australia most of the land use change happened historically around the beginning of the last century, and in fact, it's really slowed down at the moment where there's not very much at all. But if you look at the other places in the tropical world, particularly tropical Africa and South America, it's really taken off, and it's becoming the major source of greenhouse gases from these systems. So for my project, I looked at the effect of going from the native vegetation to a cleared pasture site, and then what happens then if we intensify that to a more intensive system such as a horticultural crop. In this case, I looked at lychees. And what are the basic effects of that these systems have on greenhouse gases, and trying to answer some of these unknowns. In these subtropical systems, there have been very few studies done in the past, so this is sort of the summary of three separate projects to try and answer some of these uncertainties in these systems, get some numbers from these land uses for inventory purposes and whatnot. So the study region we're in it's the humid subtropics, basically encompasses in Australia 3.2 million hectares or so, but there's similar sort of zones are found on the east coast of most continents in the world. My particular study site was about 2.5 hours north of Brisbane in the Sunshine Coast hinterland. I used an automatic chamber system that was developed from Garmisch-Partenkirchen with Klaus Badabakbal, which utilised 9 closed static chambers, automated closed static chambers, which I spread across these 3 land uses to try and get a budget from them. So the climatic conditions there, obviously it's quite wet. We get a long-term average rainfall of 1,700 millimetres, but this is quite variable. During the 2007 measurement season, there was over 1,900 millimetres, and during 2008, it was only 1,400 millimetres. So it's a 500 millimetre difference between 2 years. Temperatures are usually quite high, with pretty infrequent frosts. So this is just a photo of our chambers in the rainforest where we measured. Most of the rainforest along these areas occurs on alluvial soils. It's relatively fertile, and as a result, most of it was cleared around the 1890s to the 1900s to make way for improved pastures, typically used for dairy systems. They were initially unfertilised, but then fertilised quite extensively from the 1950s on. On this particular property, it's been lightly grazed since about the 1980s, and it has a quite a large component of tropical legumes as well. So it's a tropical grass improved legume pasture. The major grass species there is Soteria. And from then on, In 1980, it was planted a lychee orchard at 300 stands per hectare, and it's been managed as a lychee orchard since then. Typical fertilisation rates in these systems, they change around the world and they change per farmer practice, but typically they say 1 kilogram of nitrogen per tree per year. So in this case, it actually adds up to quite a lot of nitrogen added because they put it just around the drip line. It's not evenly spread, and works out about 560-odd kilograms per hectare per year that's added as nitrogen fertiliser. So I measured in these systems for 2 continuous years to try and take into account some of the climatic variability. And using these systems, I don't know if any of you were in Peter Grace's talk yesterday, but these are the automatic chambers we received from Klaus Waterbach-Bahl. Basically driven by pneumatically operated. Samples are automatically taken back to a SRI GC equipped with a FID and an ECD, and it's all analysed in-house basically. They close for a 48-minute cycle. Over that time, they're sampled 4 times every 12 minutes, and we take the linear regression of the increase over that time. So the big beauty about this system is that we can get a lot of fluxes. It's being quite wet and quite hot and humid. It's not very pleasant out there doing this stuff manually, but with this system, we've got 10 fluxes a day for 2 years from 3 land uses, which is a lot of gas sampling. We had to do it manually. And this is the sort of data you can get from it. It's a bit of a busy graph, so I'll try and break it down for you a bit. First line there is it's the average temperature, daily rainfall. As you can see, we got large rainfall events. This particular event was 270 millimetres in 2 days. Waterfield pore space, carbon dioxide in kilograms a hectare, methane in grams per hectare per day, and nitrous oxide in grams per hectare per day. So this is the results from the pasture season for 2007-2008. Pretty high turnover of CO2. We only measured, this was measured just taken by the nighttime fluxes. This included the plants in the chamber, so it's a bit of a figure. It's not to be taken too literally. Methane in this system was went between a slight uptake and a slight emission, so it worked out just as a very slight uptake. But there were substantial N2O emissions measured in this system, and over 2 kilograms of grams per N2O per hectare per year. But interestingly, that the interannual variation was quite large, with an over 42% increase in the second year. Which sort of, I'll get to this a bit more later, but it really emphasises so if we look at high resolution moisture data as well, we can do things like plotting scatter plots. This is just a scatter plot of N2O versus waterfield pore space. It sort of follows a nice curve, similar to what is in the famous Glenn-Doran curve. So it looks like most of our emissions occurred at 85% of waterfield pore space, so denitrification, as I said, it sort of follows that. But interestingly, if we look at the difference between these 2 years, 850 millimetres in the summer of the first year versus 400 millimetres actually led to a decrease in emissions. So the wetter year was actually the lower year, and we think that's because it was so wet that most of it was gone to N2 rather than N2O during denitrification. In the lychees, obviously, first year was unfertilised, second year was fertilised. Obviously, adding a lot of nitrogen puts about a big difference in N2O. But interestingly, it's the timing of the fertilisation which makes quite a difference. So autumn fertilisation actually compared to the spring fertilisation when it was quite hot and humid, basically halved the emission factor. Rainforest, very high methane uptake. Even during these wet, really wet 230 millimetres, we still got uptake happening. So very, I should say that these are all similar, the same texture class soils. So this is just the effect that land use has had on these systems. And yeah, methane uptake was correlated quite strongly with water pore space. So comparing them, obviously the lychee, because of the high N2O, if we look at a global warming potential, was substantially higher. Rainforest was also mitigated a bit by the methane uptake. So going from rainforest to pasture, we had a 7 times increase, a 19 times increase when we go to the lychees, increased fertiliser, increased legume content in the pasture, and modified water field pore space dynamics. Loss of carbon, bulk, increase in bulk density due to compaction leads to more water logging in the lychee crop, basically. And this is shown here, there's a slight change in the CNN, but the main things are the bulk density, and if you look down here at the infiltration rate, it goes from really, really high in the pasture, into the rainforest, to really low in the lychee. And this is really emphasised with this this drainage over this big event where you had 270 millimetres. If we look at the waterfall pore space, but pretty much we had rapid wetting up to 90% in the pasture and very, very slow draining in the lychees. This led to a delayed response of 24 hours before maximum N2O emissions in the pasture, and that was 4 days in the lychees. So this is, we're probably getting a lot of N2 being lost here before the waterfall pore space straightens enough till we get N2 again. And this is similarly expressed in the CO2. You can see it's completely suppressed for the whole, pretty much until that starts, so it sort of correlates quite nicely. With these automatic systems, we can also compare, Peter Grace mentioned this a bit, but if we look at the spread of what happens if we look at different sampling intervals. So I won't go too much into this, but basically this is the error associated with your sample is you go from 8 times a day to once a day to once a week to once a month, basically, and you can see it really it increases quite a lot. And also the length of time and the season that you measure is quite important too. If we just measure in the summertime, for instance, we can greatly overestimate our emissions. If we measure in the wintertime, we can underestimate our emissions. So either all year was ideal, but otherwise a combination of a spring or a summer. And that's it. So, sorry if I was a bit rushed.